Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal Reed. Every week at this time, we visit with a local author. We look into their lives to see how they write, what they write, what prompts them to write, and we have an opportunity to hear them read. And this week, we're very pleased to welcome Marie Prinz. Welcome, Marie.
Hello.
Marie, books, writing, and reading have always been central to Marie's life. Her mother taught her to read when she was five because she was always asking to read her stories to her. And her father took her to the library every week. She remembers reading biographies of famous Americans written for children when she was in grade two. Her best course in high school was the course her mother taught in English, so when she went to university, she took her degree in English literature. Then, as an adult, she came to Canada and lived in Toronto. Marie, what brought you to Canada?
Well, when we immigrated here to Ontario, that was in 1971, and it was very easy to immigrate at that time. One of us had to have a job offer, and that was about it. We moved to be with an arts organization that my husband was a part of in Chicago, as it too was immigrating to Toronto.
So where did you emigrate from?
I grew up in New Jersey, but I went to school in the Chicago area.
Oh, cool. So not too far away then.
No.
Now, one of the things you've been involved with a lot over the last years is the Toronto Women's Bookstore. So tell us how you became involved in that.
One day while I was shopping in Kensington Market, and oh, this is quite a while ago, 35, 40 years ago, I saw the very first Toronto Women's Bookstore and I went in to explore. I left after I had signed up to volunteer. And very quickly, my involvement grew, along with my friend, Patty Kirk, her participation as well. And so we actually ended up co-managing it for about 12 years.
Wow. What do you and Patty see as perhaps the high points of those 12 years running the bookstore?
Well, there were many daily highlights that have, in my mind anyway, merged into larger overall memories. I remember the enormity of moving to and enlarging the bookstore on Harbert Street. And there was, of course, the huge learning curve of growing the store into a successful business over the years. We had a lot of pride in extending the store's outreach and influence beyond Toronto into all of Canada. After Patty and I had children, we left the women's bookstore to establish Parent Books, which she and her husband still run just down the block from where the women's bookstore used to live.
And I'm curious, what makes it a women's bookstore?
Oh, we had a very large stock on books that were written by, for, and about women. On just about every subject you can imagine. We had a really good children's section, too. We also sold LPs, posters, jewelry, all done by women and sold to women.
Oh.
So it was a very large stock.
And that would include like fiction and nonfiction?
Oh, fiction, biography, all kinds of nonfiction on all kinds of topics, history, religion, women of color, gay, lesbian fiction and writing. Yeah, there was a lot of material there.
So I guess that kind of went hand in hand with the feminist movement back in the 70s and,
oh, yes,
and
absolutely.
So on.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. What made you give up the bookstore?
Well, as I said, Patty and I moved a few blocks away when we started Parent Books. We both had young children, and we saw this as the next part of our life. And in that store, there, again, is a really large collection of books specializing on books for adults about children. And again, on an enormous amount of topics.
So not
more than I can even remember.
So not just parenting as such, but...
No, there's books there for teachers. There's books there for all kinds of professionals who deal in any capacity with children. They've got a great book list online.
And are you still involved with that store?
No, I left it when I had my second child and when we moved out here to Northumberland County.
Oh.
And that was 25 years ago.
Wow. So you are writing yourself now these days, and I believe you took a memoir writing course at Halliburton School for the Arts and been working on that and some poetry. Perhaps you'd like to read a piece of memoir for us.
I would. In 1998, my family moved to this neck of the woods, so to speak, Northumberland County. We live now on the outskirts of a small town in an historic home that's surrounded in part by woods and a stream. The piece I've chosen to read is an excerpt from Manifestations of the Pond, which I wrote a few years ago. And as I was editing it this past weekend, I realized that not only is it a nature piece, but it's also an Easter piece. For while it chronicles the birth of our pond, it also describes a spiritual reawakening in myself.
Oh, wonderful.
So again, it's the first part of Manifestations from the Pond. By country standards, our pond is small, maybe 50 feet in diameter, from one weedy shore to another. Basically, it's a frog pond, only 5 feet deep in the middle, a third of its depth the primordial muck that incubates dragonfly nymphs and mosquito larvae. It was dug by a backhoe out of the boggy corner of our acre and a half lot, where the creek rounds a bend and heads south to Lake Ontario. My husband spent his weekends that summer shaping its edges and bordering an outcrop with rocks as a small sitting area for our chairs and an umbrella. At first, we had envisioned deep waters filled with sunfish and perch, and a shoreline circled by ferns and native flowers. We planted marsh marigolds, blue flag, and an elder bush into the boggy parts. Jewelweed, boneset, and Joe Pieweed picked their own places alongside them. In the muck of the pond, we lodged white and pink water lilies. After 3 summers, their blossoms covered half the pond surface, leaving room for pickerel reed and arrowhead to stand erect on opposite sides of the pond. Then, cattails reclaimed the outlet, and uninvited grasses and goldenrod pushed close to shore, crowding out the transplanted turtlehead and cardinal flower. The tough roots of yellow irises, once thought beautiful, grabbed a toehold on as much shoreline as possible and grew into a nearly invincible foe. Gradually, our vision of an artistic landscape was replaced by a grudging appreciation of both the native and alien plants that thrived in the heavy clay soil around our pond. For amid unruly weeds, we glimpsed tiny blue spots of water forget-me-nots and white sprinklings of bed straw. Next to the rocks, we identified bristly nutgrass and pink trailing smartweed, all modest flora, offering their unique shapes and colors if we but noticed their unobtrusive presence. After a few years, we conceded that the natural world had its own agenda, best left to observe rather than manipulate. When we paid attention, small manifestations revealed themselves, some humorous, some profound, most ephemeral, but all unexpected revelations, marveled at from the confines of those Algonquin chairs under the green umbrella. Every mid-April along the margins of the pond, the invisible peeper frogs herald the opening act of the nocturnal mating and territorial squabbling season. The elongated trills of the toads, like fingernails on a comb, soon join this amphibious musical. After the weather warms, the high-pitched tremolo of tree frogs moves from our woods to the water. Finally, in early June, when the shrill call of the peepers fades away, the green frogs add their rubber band twang to the choir. Occasionally, the rapid hollow notes of a solitary leopard frog resonate as he, too, seeks a mate in the waters that are as busy as a Roman bath in the dark. Come morning, all is quiet. But along the shore lie jelly masses of frog spawn, and twined around the lily pads, strings of toad eggs, whose black dots evolve into hundreds of tadpoles, wriggling in the shallow water of the edges. A month later, on the day of metamorphosis, the border grass vibrates when innumerable brown toads the size of pennies hop towards the grape arbor and out into the wide world of our yard. During this coupling tumult, spontaneous frog wars erupt as the green frogs vie for footage along the shoreline. One low croak begins the challenge. A dozen twangs of varying pitches echo around the pond. Like sumo wrestlers, the frogs grab opponents and tumble over and over in the shallows. Moments later, the loser concedes defeat and retreats to his corner. Then another couple takes the stage and repeats this performance to the delight of its human audience. These acts of macho mating reoccur well into June, when the weary actors disperse to drier parts of the garden and fatten up for winter's long sleep.
Thank you, Marie. That was delightful. I love all the colors and the flowers, and really makes you yearn for the warm days of summer, doesn't it? Well, I think now we'll take a short break.